You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Bass running through your brain, in your veins, wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening. We're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Remember, it's not how far, it's not how fast, it's how frequent. Get out there, be consistent. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week. Delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, Blue Apron and Brooklinen. They bring the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games, and there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's beginning to look a lot like Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. We are done. Our tree's up. Our wreath is hung. Our lights are up. We've decorated gingerbread houses already. Like, it could... Wow. It's Christmas. We actually already had
New Year's. Bring on Valentine's Day,
I guess. I've given up on my New Year's resolution.
Yeah. Also, you are beginning to look more like yourself because your stash is gone.
My stash is gone. Raised a little bit of money for St. Jude's and then donated more to Movember and One American Appeal. So it's always good.
Well done.
I almost kept it for till the end of the year. And then I asked my girls, they're like, we like it. And then my wife was like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, having seen it a lot over the last month, I'm going to side with your wife on this one.
Okay.
But, it's good to know that you can grow such a robust thing on your face.
Yeah. It's like hearty tomato sauce. It's good when you want it. You just don't want it that much.
That's right. Hey, we got a great show for you today. We got games, lots of games to talk about, some new games, some games that have been out a while, the exciting end of the year games. We've got some juicy tidbits of news to work through. We have got bonus table time content that I'm really excited for. I actually got to have an interview with one of the creators of The Seventh Continent, which has become one of my favorite board games in the world. Really amazing interview, like one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. So that'll be at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that. But we also have an awesome guest. You know that DLC is always your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because once again, DLC stands for Destiny's longtime champion. Because you know him from Game Rant and Film Fracture. He's our go-to Destiny expert here on DLC. Returning champion, Anthony Taormina. Hello, Anthony.
Hello. I have a cat, so I cannot decorate for Christmas.
Oh, the cat will destroy it all?
The cat will. I mean, he's not one of those, you know, like directly vindictive types of cats, but he will see the ornaments. You know, like the ones everybody knows. But he likes to play. So if he saw things dangling from a tree, I'm sure he would knock them down. And the only ornaments I really have are like precious ornaments. I'm not at that, you know, stage of, oh, these ornaments, I could give or take them. That most of them are like treasured heirlooms.
Right, right. Well, that's sad. Your cat is literally the Grinch.
In a way, yeah.
Well, rest assured, we will bring the holiday cheer and we will talk about games in the holiday season. And we will start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit. That is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Also, fun people hanging out in the subreddit. A good place to go talk about games, talk about the show, talk about whatever you like with cool folks. So I urge you to give it a shot. Check it out. Anthony, you are our guest this week, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I mean, I'm here for a very specific reason. So I will say that this, you know, you guys brought me on. Huge fan of Serial. Love Serial and Mario. No. Basically, it's a big, giant week plus worth of developments within the Destiny community, or Destiny 2 community now, culminating in a very lengthy blog post and a podcast essentially detailing what the developers are going to do to make the game better for players.
Yes, we talked last week on last week's episode about some of the craziness involving this XP kerfuffle that sprouted up among the community of people finding out that XP was not being reported after level 20 in the same increments that it was actually being earned. You were actually earning less XP than you were supposed to. And Destiny 2 devs came out and said, we don't like that either. We'll change it. And then they ended up having levels be double the amount of XP. There was a lot of upset people, a lot of criticism, a lot of controversy. There had been scheduled a big stream, a big live stream from the devs. It was sort of their last big live stream before Curse of Osiris, which hits next week.
That it was Curse this week. Reddit Iris, I think. Was the
nice. Nicely done. Who would have thought? Yeah, very good. So they canceled that stream and did instead a blog. So one-way communication rather than two-way communication. And I'm very curious, Anthony.
Yes.
What your take on all of this is. Were you one of the people that was upset about all of the XP reporting? And do you think that they have done enough to rectify that? And what did you think of the state of Destiny 2 blog?
Okay, lots to unpack here. The XP thing, I feel like the XP thing was something that was actually known, but it didn't really become an issue per se until the most recent Clarion Call event, which is basically Bungie's way of saying like, hey, we're going to give you double XP so that you can earn, the bright engrams, which contain cosmetic items like, emotes and shaders and ships and ghosts and stuff like that. We're going to give you a way to get those faster because season 2 is going to launch alongside Curse of Osiris. So a lot of that stuff is going to go away. So they wanted to say like, you know, if you want any of these things, you can, you know, you have a better avenue towards getting them. They even added two of the most popular emotes that never entered the Eververse inventory. They added those like at the last minute this week so that people could buy them if they had enough bright dust. But yeah, it was definitely the intention was to give people a lot of XP so that they could earn bright engrams. But then a lot of people thought, well, how does this XP cooldown that we've known about affect it? And so I think there was, not a lot of knowledge about it, but eventually it kind of became easier to show evidence for it, to be able to say like, look, here's what I'm supposed to be getting XP wise and here's what I am getting. And there was a great disparity between that. And there's a huge, you know, XP cooldown, especially for quick activities. So yeah, Bungie basically came out and said, this is real. We're removing it, but we're also doubling the XP you need to actually get a full level. So that was kind of iffy. And it basically was a kind of fuel for the fire of the people that didn't really like Destiny 2's endgame to begin with, were very critical of it. So it gave them this path of like, okay, this is like, you know, the nail in the coffin. We're going to use this. Yeah. This is what we're going to kind of blame.
Smoking gun.
Yes. So yeah, there was all this unrest surrounding the endgame and all kinds of different other stuff going on that I think people were frustrated about, but this was kind of like the, you know, the thing that they were able to say, like, look, you have admitted you do this, and you didn't even say why you did this. You know, you didn't come out as Bungie and say, like, basically a lot of the community wants them to come out and just say, like, we don't want you to earn things too fast, but they're not going to say that, but that's what it feels like. So at the same time, while this kind of unrest was growing, they had one more of those streams scheduled, and the stream was supposed to be focused on gear. And nobody wants just this fashion show when there's a lot of problems with the game. You know, a lot of active members in the community said, if Bungie, if you do not talk about quality of life improvements during the stream, I'm done with this game. And it was kind of like a, you know, a growing sentiment there as well. And a lot of active streamers who help promote the game, and, you know, they don't get paid, but they're, it's like their main game on Twitch, for example. They were saying, look, you know, you need to say something. This stream just can't be a fashion show. And I think Bungie knew that. So then Luke Smith went on Twitter and said, look, we'll have something to say after the stream. And I think that's the podcast that went live after the blog post between him and Mark Noseworthy, the design lead. And, but even then people were like, I don't know if this is going to be good enough. So yeah, then Bungie said, okay, canceling the stream, and we're going to put together a blog post that completely, you know, is transparent about what we're working on, and when things are going to release, you know, long, you know, when things that we're working on, we have release windows. But all of that said, this very comprehensive blog post to me, does not, and I think a lot of people in the community would agree, it doesn't do much to change my feelings about the endgame and the problems that exist in Destiny 2. It really is just kind of, it to me feels like the type of thing that you would introduce into a game after like several months of beta testing. But the game has been out for several months, not beta tested.
So what do you mean by that? You mean it's just
like little incremental things, you know, they're like, yeah, well, instead of giving you 5 tokens, we're giving you 6 tokens, something like that. That's obviously not what they're doing, but little tiny things like that. Or we're seeing that people are frustrated with, you know, going after mods. So we're going to sell some mods as well. It's like they're just tiny changes. You know, they're not none of them are game changing tweaks. And that is a huge problem, because for most people, they think that there are some fundamental problems that need like some complete rewriting, like the weapon system being focused on kinetic energy and power, or the mod system itself doesn't feel very customizable or rewarding. There are just so many things about the game that they really need to go back to the drawing board with. And they didn't in this blog post. It's a lot of like, well, here's a little, you know, here's a little kind of half step or a quarter step. And it's, yeah, it's.
What about this feeling of transparency? I mean, in the blog post, they said that they felt they betrayed the expectation of transparency that you have for Destiny 2. That's a quote. And also, quote, we have begun that work and will continue to provide updates to you about timelines and specifics. Going forward, we plan to continue this dialogue as openly and frequently as possible. This will be an ongoing process, but one we are committed to. Do you feel like transparency is part of the problem? And do you have confidence that this is a change in their approach?
I do feel like, yeah, transparency has been a huge problem for Bungie, especially because since the game has come out, there's been, you know, This Week at Bungie posts. They do them pretty much every Thursday. There's been, you know, some misses for holidays and whatnot, but a lot of them come and go without any discussion of like a lot of people's frustrations. Like there's a whole, I know a lot of us play PvE only, but there's like a whole PvP community that was dying in Destiny 1 for private matches and some sort of ranked system. And then Destiny 2 came out without private matches and no hint of a ranked system. And so you have this community that can help sell your game to esports or just make your game, you know, entertaining and in self-made tournaments and things like that. And there was no talk of that. You know, people had to like look for tiny details. Finally, they actually addressed it. But yeah, I think that there was a lot of just like, maybe it was a case of, I don't really know, but maybe it was a case of them like not being able to say a timeline because they don't know, you know, like I think one of the biggest faults with Destiny 1 and now Destiny 2 is that Destiny 1 released and there were all these areas where it could improve and people were like, I like the foundation but I think it needs areas to improve, but they also have two DLCs planned for the rest of the year that they need to be working on. So it doesn't seem like they have the manpower to both, dedicate all these people to the live team to making the game better and put out substantial DLC content. And unfortunately, Curse of Osiris doesn't even seem like it's that substantial.
Yeah. Christian, you are still playing Destiny 2. We'll be hearing about that, I think, during your playlist contribution. But how do you feel about this notion of transparency overall? Do you feel like more transparency is always better from a game dev? Or do you think that perhaps it's unrealistic from a gamer's perspective to expect game developers to be transparent with their plans for these ongoing games?
It's hard. As a fan and player, you want transparency. I listened to the podcast they put out after the blog post twice, actually, once on the way to work and then once on the way home, because I was like, oh, let me let this digest and then listen again.
You can't just stay at work.
No, I got to come home, and what am I going to listen to?
What else is there to listen to?
I mean, well, you burn through things quickly when your commute is what it is. when you're 4 miles from work, but in Los Angeles.
Yeah, no, you don't have to tell me.
And so you want transparency, but what one of the points I think they brought up on the podcast that is, I think, sometimes maddening, but accurate, is we want to tell you things, but sometimes we don't know. And what harm comes from saying, hey, we want to do this. We're planning to do this. We think we're going to do this. And then if that stuff doesn't happen, or it comes out 2 months later, or it comes out and is bad. And there's this whole, you know, wide range of things that can happen in game development in between what they want to make, what they can make, what they will make, and what they do make. And then when you're a large company, part of an even larger public company, what you're putting out into the world in terms of what you're going to do and when you're going to do it can have major ramifications for funding and for your share price and stock price. And you know, businesses and whatever, it's a whole, you know, whatever. I don't want to get into like, will they need our money? But I understand. And even just from an artist that creating something standpoint, where like, I didn't announce when my second album was going to come out until it was close to coming out or available, I think like to pre-order on iTunes, until I had that date locked in place, because I didn't want to advertise something and then have that date be wrong. But what if someone only heard that date and then they go to iTunes or Google and they look it up and it's not there, and then they're angry and they won't look again? And, you know, imagine if like Star Wars was like coming out December 14th and then like just now they're like, well, no, the 40th, or I don't know if that's not a date.
The 40th.
You know what I mean, though? I was thinking of movies that have done it.
Nailed it.
Movies that have changed their date, but it happens much 40 earlier.
Days, half this month.
The 40th. We're coming out the 40th of December, and the audience is like,
I was thinking a 40-day delay. It doesn't matter. But imagine if they did say the 40th.
Oh, that would be great. The audience is like, wait, when are we? I need to pre-order. What? I can't.
It just breaks
the internet.
When they announced Final Fantasy 15, they're like, it's coming out. Oh, no, it's coming out 1 month earlier. And they're like, no, it's coming out the 40th. I mean, it's coming out the next month on the 10th?
My 40th of December?
My third stand-up album is coming out March 40th. So you can look.
March.
So I understand, and I feel bad for them. But as a consumer or fan of the game, it does feel a little ridiculous that you're not able to. It's like, come on, what has happened? You have to see all this. You had to have been aware of it for months before the game came out, right? Like, you're smart people. You had people beta testing, internal testing the game. Like, so I don't know what the answer is, but I understand where they're coming from. But I also, as a fan, become very frustrated when you're just, you feel like you're left dangling in the wind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because the nature of a game dev is game development is different than any other medium, most other mediums that is. And that's, things are iterative, you know, things change. And so being transparent one day feels like you're lying to someone the next, because you were being honest that time when you said, hey, we're going to put that cool feature in the game. And then the next day when they're like, you can't put that cool feature in the game, or that cool feature wasn't as cool as we thought it was going to be. It sounds cool on paper, but when we put it in the game, it didn't really turn out to be cool. Look, so we didn't put it in the game.
Look at No Man's Sky. I don't think they were lying to you. I think they wanted to do all that stuff. And all we know about that game is what, you know, the Jurassic Park trailer, right? Like, I mean, that game got torn to shreds for that. So it's hard. It's hard.
It is. One bit of positive Destiny 2 news, though. I love this idea that now you can control your ghost using your Amazon Echo. I love this. I love this. I love this. It is. They've added hands-free voice command features to Destiny 2. You download this new skill for your Amazon Echo devices, and then you can do all kinds of stuff. You can ask about lore and talk to your – it's – you ask your Echo, but your ghost in the game answers you. And it's like over 1,000 custom voice lines just for this feature, all done by Nolan North. You can also
my understanding save loadouts. Is this doesn't happen in the game. This is just your Echo talks to you in a ghost and Nolan North's voice.
Correct.
Yes. My understanding is it's the game.
No. I believe it's – so it's either your Echo, or you can buy a actual ghost attachment for the Echo that will talk to you.
But it doesn't talk to you in the game?
No.
I should have tried it. I haven't downloaded it on the Echo yet.
You can save loadouts and stuff and change your outfits and stuff in the game. It affects the game.
Well, yeah, that's like the app.
It does affect the game. Yeah, but I think it connects to the like Bungie app or the Destiny app.
Either way, sure. I think it's cool. And I mean, the thing, I did a rant on this on Newest, Latest, Best, my daily video game show. And I think this is just more proof that Microsoft are dummies for taking the Kinect away from their consoles. They were just ahead of the game. They were just a little too early to this voice command, personal assistant in your house device revolution that's happening. And now these companies are coming up with these, you know, workarounds for it. And you literally had the console that does that out of the box. You had the thing there. It's crazy to me how an iPhone X basically has a Kinect shrunk down to a little strip on the top of it, and all these other devices are trying to put Kinect style voice command features in objects. They had that, and they were just too spineless to stick to their guns and double down on Kinect and understand how cool it was, instead of it just being this flail your arms around device that it really was actually neat and could have been a differentiator for their console in this generation. But nope, we had to bow to the people that think it was lame, and because they were waggling their arms around.
I would argue,
makes me so frustrated.
Voice control is maybe a neat thing, but I would argue that what your so-called shrunk down Kinect in your iPhone 10 does is still stupid.
Right now?
Yeah.
Talk to me in a year.
Yeah, when the iPhone 11's out and your 10 is outdated.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, yeah, my 10 is outdated. The 11 has they've put the technology in the 10. We are at the precipice of a complete revolution, a new paradigm shift in how we interact with software. Because since software has existed, it's been a one-way street. You figure out how to use software. Software is there, ready to be used, and you're figuring out how to use it. Now, software looks at you, and it's a two-way street. You're figuring out how to use software, and software is trying to figure out what you think of all that. What's happening with you? What's going on? That could have been the Kinect. That could have been the Xbox. That could have been – that revolution could have happened where video games were watching you just as much as you were watching them, and changing and subtly evolving and reacting to how your body language, your heartbeat, your facial expression was affected by what's going on in the game. It could have been the first two-way street video games. And now they're too stupid to have done that. Apple will be doing that. And all of these apps that are now going to perceive you will completely change the way software interacts with human beings.
Huh. I don't know if I agree. I also don't know if Kinect could have done all that.
Why not?
Because if you use Kinect?
Did I use Kinect? It was a software problem, not a hardware problem. The software was in its infancy and they aborted it. They smothered it in the crib because people were like, this is dumb, instead of realizing the potential
that was there. Overly graphic analogies for what Microsoft did to the Kinect.
They disemboweled
it. How about that? How about this? They scrapped it.
They took a butterfly knife. You know how butterfly knives work? No, I'm just kidding. That's gross. Anthony, are you going to use your – do you have an Echo? Are you going to use your Echo?
I do not have an Echo. Yeah, I have no interest in this. This is I get that I'm the Destiny guy, but yeah. It is,
You're not controlling your ghost with your voice, man?
All the things that it says it can do doesn't really seem – like it's not – I don't know. It's not like – it doesn't – I have a lot of apps that are already set up where I play, so I don't feel like it's going to be able to do anything special for me. Seems cool. You know, it seems like a thing that a fan could have, but yeah, definitely not.
You don't want to have a conversation with Nolan North?
I've talked to Nolan North before.
He's not that interesting.
He's a nice guy. He offered me peanut M&Ms once. Yeah, it just, changing loadouts, you know, things like that, or looking where your clan members, those are just not the things. If I could say Ghost, get my nameless Midnight out of the vault. I don't think it can do that. If it could do that, you might convince me, but I don't think it can.
I think it's similar to that, right? You have these loadouts and you can.
The loadouts I have, you know, I could just like, I could click a button right now on my PC and send me my raid loadout or whatever.
But clicking a button is.
That's so true. But then you're going to be clicking buttons anyway on your controller or your keyboard and mouse. So.
Yeah.
I get the appeal of it. It just, no interest.
Anthony, I've noticed your facial expression has gone sour because you've been pushing so many buttons.
Exactly.
Please allow me to help you with all of your loadouts.
It's going to say, hey, Anthony, do you want me to despawn these ads from this raid boss fight because it's so laggy and broken that you just want it to be over with?
I think it goes like this. Anthony, you're asleep. It's 3. Do you want to play? Come on.
That's Christian's. That's your ringtone that he has on.
I will say that I liked Kinect or the Xbox One Kinect, and I used it a lot.
Me too.
When I had it, you know, pass through to, you know, TV and volume and stuff. I definitely agree with you in the sense that like that is a cool technology, but yeah, forcing people to pay for it when they maybe didn't want it was the problem.
Fair enough. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
Nintendo.
Okay.
No one's going to help me out with that? Come on, guys.
Is there a jingle that I'm not aware of?
You don't know the Nintendo cereal jingle?
No, I don't. No.
What?
Sing it.
It goes like, Nintendo, it's a cereal. Nintendo. That's pretty much it. That's the whole thing.
Oh.
That's a terrible jingle. I know. Swing your arms from side to side. Come on. It's time to go do the Mario.
No.
That's what I know.
No, this was the classic 80s Nintendo cereal commercial. It's back, baby. Super Mario cereal, that is, wait for it. You don't just look at the back of the box. You mash your box onto your controller because it's an amiibo. Cereal amiibo, Jeff.
I think this is cool, dude. I think this is cool. You say that you think it's lame, but it's cool.
What? This is the best thing.
I heard the tone of your voice.
I mean, yes, ultimately it's lame, but... I'd rather have a amiibo that I get to eat sugary cereal out of than one that just sits on a shelf and gets dusty.
I think this opens up a whole universe of what amiibo can be. Amiibo isn't just toy figurine. Amiibo can be your shirt or your glasses or your whatever. A poster could be amiibo.
Yeah.
Your friend Larry can be amiibo. Anybody can be amiibo now.
You got to get this little, whatever it is, RFD chip thing and whatever, and you tap it in and you get fun little bonuses. And
yeah.
Cereals have been selling, you know, their sugary milk leftovers to kids for years, at least since March 40th. And bringing it back in a way that adapts to, or is not just now you have a little Cracker Jack prize in the bottom of the box that you're interacting with.
It's digital Cracker Jack prize.
Yeah, it's great. I like it. And I'm sure I will buy at least one box of this and be like, oh, the cereal's not great, but this is fun.
Anthony, you think it's lame?
Very lame.
You're lame.
It's just, I don't even know what to say. I think what's cool about Amiibos is that they, like, you know, they're pretty well designed. They, you know, you don't even need to own a Nintendo system and you could own an Amiibo and they look.
Yeah, you can, anyone can buy cereal.
You can have this cereal. You don't need a Nintendo system.
Yes, but is the cereal actually going to be good? Who here thinks that the cereal is going to taste good?
Do you like sugar or not?
I mean, I enjoy sugar, but I'm not a big cereal fan. It just, yeah. I mean, if somebody had said to, or if they had come out and said, like, it was the Amiibo was going to do something that was significant, it adds gold coins.
The Amiibo do anything significant, though.
This is where
The Zelda Amiibos, like, there's one of the Amiibos gives you Epona in the game. One of the Amiibos gives you Master Sword. In the Skyrim on Switch, you can get Link's outfit and the shield and the sword. It's, yeah.
This is where I am in complete agreement with you, Anthony. This is where it is lame. It is only hearts and gold coins. Come on.
This is Connect 1.0, Jeff.
This is a missed opportunity. No. This is a missed opportunity because you could have had this give you a Mario milk mustache.
Sure. Yeah. 100%.
Right? It could have been a cereal bowl hat.
There are so many Mario ways
to apply it and make it exclusive. Make it something where people actually want this cereal.
He could have just been soggy all the time.
This is a start. I'm sure if this is successful, there will be more and they'll raise the prices and you'll have limited editions or do whatever.
What stops them from doing it right now? Yeah. Put an outfit in the game. It's nothing to make a Mario outfit.
Yeah, but there will be more, but this year they released their two biggest franchises. What are we going to get? Like, what's on the horizon? We're going to get some Metroid
cereal?
I'm
sorry that a company is giving you something fun and you're poo-pooing it because it's not fun enough. Get out of here.
You're telling me you don't want to eat the Metroid cereal?
I mean, I would be more interested, but what I'm saying is that, like, you can't say, well, oh, this is just the start. No, this is the... knowing how Nintendo works, we may never see a Zelda or a Mario game on the Switch again.
Hey, Jeff, I'll eat the Metroid cereal when you play the actual Metroid game, jerk.
That's not enough incentive. Not enough incentive for me to play the Metroid game. That would require me finding my 3DS, which is somewhere in my house. Guys, you ready for my story of the week?
Something to do with cereal?
No. Guess what? Polygon named its top 500 games of all time. Polygon.com, top 500 games of all time. And guess what was number one?
Sounds like
the number one game. 500 games they counted down. Guess what was number one? Just guess. What would be, I don't know, as someone who's listened to DLC for 4 years, if that's you, if that describes you out there, what do you think would be the number one video game objectively of all time that we have been saying, I personally have been saying for 4 years on this show, before that on Weekend Confirmed, and now here comes Polygon, these Johnny-come-latelys with their top 500 list of all time. They're running down the top 500 games. Guess who agrees with the old Jeff Meister? Polygon.com. Guess what that number one game is, guys?
Jump Rope?
It's not Jump Rope. It's not even a video game.
Said top 500 games.
Video games. Talk about video games.
500 best video dash games.
Video dash games. It's Tetris. You're damn right it's Tetris.
So does this help or hurt your argument?
I think it's case closed.
I've read some of the comments on some of those Polygon reviews, Jeff. I don't know if the audience, if this helps you or hurts you with them.
I'm just saying, Polygon, we did your research for you 4 years ago.
We did. That's
true. We had a comprehensive, well-sourced March Madness style runoff of all the best games of all time, and the winner, undisputed winner, was Tetris. Well, it wasn't actually Tetris. That was skewed because we had audience voting. But I instilled the fact that it should have been Tetris, and therefore I think that we were there. We arrived first.
Sure.
Yeah, I've sent Polygon a cease and desist letter in order to take their list down. Thank you. Or pay us money. So
I like it. But that's not my story of the week. That was merely my story of the week.
Wait, your story of the week was Destiny 2 supporting Amazon Echo.
No. That's just something I brought up. Okay. My story of the week is VR, y'all. Several VR stories that I'm going to lump into one. Guess what? VR is doing really, really well. It's doing really, really well. In fact, Q3 2017, cumulative VR sales topped 1 million units. Not only that, but PlayStation VR on Black Friday, they said they sold as many units as they did on launch day. So PlayStation VR crushing it right now. They have the biggest portion of the market. And we can surmise, using some deduction based on those statistics of them doing really well on Black Friday, that they're in about the 2 million install base place, which is not too shabby at all for, you know, this being the first year it was out. And VR as a whole in one quarter, 1 million units sold. Q3, this isn't even Q4 where we had all these, all these holiday incentives. But Q3, they had a bunch of those price drops and things did really, really well. 21% of sales in Q3 to Oculus Rift, 16% to HTC Vive. PlayStation VR had the lion's share of sales. And I think the fact that the price point is finally going down, there's a lot of great software out there. This is really, really great. And on top of that, Sony is now offering this try the PSVR on your own face.
They offered.
Yeah, past tense. But that's good because so many people signed up for it that they had to shut it down.
It is good.
So,
it's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So the idea that, you know, which I've been saying for a long time, that you kind of have to experience VR to understand how cool it is. You can't really see a video or whatever. Sounds like Sony understands this. They allowed PlayStation Plus members to sign up for the ability to try it at home. You get the PlayStation VR bundle sent to you with Skyrim VR as well, and the PSVR demo disc 2.0. And you can keep it. If you like it, you keep it. And you pay $299 for all that, which is a pretty great price. And if you don't like it, you send it back. All of this, very good, positive news for VR, and I'm thrilled. Thoughts?
I think it's good. I think, you know, there are good games out. Hopefully more are coming. We'll talk about a VR experience that I had recently. I still, owning two headsets and not regretting either purchase, I still feel I off 98% of the time, 99% of the time, I prefer to game outside of VR. You know, it is very much a 1.0 iteration of it, and I hope it will get better, but there are just enough impediments and the games are just not there for me personally yet to make this be like, when I think about playing games, I think about playing VR. Instead, it's like, oh, I guess I should try this thing in VR versus I really want to play this game. But I'm glad it's doing well because I own two of them, so...
Anthony, I know you're not really on the VR train either, but I think this is cool news all the way around. And it never was going to be, you know, this light switch of everybody converting. But the fact that it's strong and it's solid and it's consistent and it seems to be continuing a undercurrent of momentum, I think is a positive thing for the industry as a whole. Do you disagree with that?
I mean, yeah, I think that it definitely, I would love to see, you know, more innovative games that use VR. It just, yeah, like you said, VR for me, I have a PlayStation VR and I was lucky enough to play with a Vive for about a month when it first came out. It's a fun technology. It's a technology that I think is really cool, but It's not the type of thing that for me, I tend to play a lot of games, and it just like the barrier to entry for me of like, you have to make sure the situation is ideal. You know, you'll start playing a game and it'll be a little wonky and then it instantly ruins it. I want them to stick with it because I want eventually for us to get the improvements we need, like wireless and or true wireless and better resolution and better detection and things like that. But yeah, I'm in the camp of, I have a PlayStation VR, and when people say, what do you think of it? I say, don't get it right now.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. A lot of people are getting it right now, though.
It's true.
So that's good. Hey, I think VR is a game changer. You know what else is a game changer, guys?
Hmm.
Our sponsor, Blue Apron. I got to tell you, Blue Apron has changed my game, my personal game. And by game, I mean life. And by life, I mean it's amazing. I love Blue Apron. If you've heard me talk on the show for any period of time, you know that it's literally my favorite sponsor. I know we're not supposed to have favorites, but I begged Blue Apron to sponsor the show because I wanted to just jump from the mountaintops and tell people about it. I've gotten like all my family into Blue Apron. I talk about it at every dinner party I go to. I'm like, you guys use Blue Apron? I love Blue Apron. My wife and I have been doing it for like 3 years now. We adore it. We eat better. We eat healthier. The recipes are awesome. I think we've had maybe one or two repeats in 3 years. That's an incredible amount of variety. And they're delicious. I mean, half the time, the stuff that we're eating, my wife and I turn to each other and say, if we had ordered this in a restaurant for, you know, $25, we would have thought it was a great restaurant we had to come back to. And yet we made it ourselves at home for $10 per person per meal. That's just incredibly affordable and wonderful. And I feel like I have leveled up my own cooking skill, which is extremely satisfying and gratifying. I love the fact that I know how to chop stuff now, and I kind of have a sense of what goes into things and how to do certain things. And I've just accumulated that because of Blue Apron's amazing, simple, easy to follow recipes that are full of pictures and just are so well written and really break things down very easily. I'm not a guy that knew how to cook before Blue Apron, and now I feel like I do have that skill set, and that is so cool. It feels so awesome. In fact, I've been saying this every time Blue Apron has sponsored our show, and I'm finally going to do it. I want to tell you some of my Blue Apron tips that I have learned. One is, the thing that's cool about Blue Apron is they send you just the amount of ingredients that you need for a thing. So if it calls for an egg, you get one egg. It's really cool. There's no waste. There's no stuff going bad in your fridge. It's just the amount of ingredients you need. The one caveat to that, the one thing that's not true, is they always give you, if a recipe requires any garlic, they always give you an entire clove of garlic, which means you almost always have extra garlic, which means you have the ability to do my number one Jeff tip, which is double or triple the amount of garlic they call for. I think that improves the recipe so much, and I love it. I always double. If it says 2 cloves of garlic, I'm putting 6 cloves of garlic in it. I love it. I think it is such a great way to just spice up your recipes. So use that tip, because it's cool because you have the extra garlic in the box. But everything else is just what you need, and it's so awesome. So you get these things delivered to your house. It's all the ingredients you need. You cook them yourself. I love it. And we're going to give you $30 off your first dinner. Basically, Blue Apron is treating you, DLC listeners, to your first dinner on them. It's amazing. All you got to do is go to blueapron.com/DLC, blueapron.com/DLC, and sign up, try it. $30 off your it's an amazing thing. Try it. You can cancel if you don't like it. I bet you it's going to change your life the way it changed mine. This is really, really great. These are amazing recipes, and they're so fun, and it will improve your life. blueapron.com/DLC. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Anthony Taormina, I'm so pleased that you're here this week, because I am not playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2, but I'm very curious. I'm Xenoblade curious.
Yeah.
The new Switch role-playing game that Nintendo has been talking about for a long, long time. This is their big role-playing game, for, you know, giant role-playing game release on the Switch. What do you think of Xenoblade Chronicles 2?
So far, I'm really intrigued by it. I will say that if you are not a fan of JRPGs running at 100% JRPG, just this game is not for you. It's not a, you know, it's not a Final Fantasy that's trying to be a little more approachable. It is. I don't want to like get into too many specifics, but you know, like women with larger than normal things, there are some, you know, some very Japanese JRPG that just says Japanese twice, but there are some Japanese things going on that I think, yeah, are going to turn off a lot of people. But for me, I'm a huge fan of just like
personalities.
Those really, I love personalities, but I'm a huge fan of just like those, you know, grindy JRPGs. And this game is very, very grindy. It's very focused on accumulating a lot of what are called blades, which are kind of blades. They're basically like, I mean, it's a bit reductive, but they're basically like Pokemon.
Ah, right.
They give you different abilities, and the combat is not like turn-based in the sense of like, you know, you have your party aligned and an enemy, you can move around the area and you basically auto attack. And as you attack, you build up meters for special abilities that do different things. And at the same time, your blade is hanging out with you and sort of building up your connection with them. And then they too can like trigger their own abilities that have maybe some buffs or debuffs or elemental attacks. And you could switch the blades on the fly. And then you have other party members that just kind of do their own thing as well. You only control the one character that you choose to control. But I think overall, having only played like maybe 5 or 6 hours of it, it still is going into tutorial mode. So I don't know how deep the game gets, but it's very involved. It's very much like one of those games where you are going to be going out and trying to complete as many quests as possible to accumulate these blades and build out your party in the way you want. And on top of it, I think the story is very interesting. It has a kind of, it's like you're watching an anime type of thing. So it has like those twists and turns and some kooky characters and some questionable ones as well. But I think overall, if you are a JRPG fan and you own a Switch, you should definitely play the game. It's going to be a great game to take on the go and just grind out some quests that are not going to be super like, you know, involved or require your full attention. And I think that's really what drew me to the game, is that it's a, you know, kind of HD JRPG that I could take on the go. And while I'm, I don't know, waiting for somebody to be done with something, I can do a little bit of grinding.
Right. Are you done with that? What? Whatever you're doing, are you done with it?
Well, no. I mean, I didn't want to be specific. I don't leave my house a lot, so I don't actually wait for anybody. So
Anthony,
theoretically, it's nice to know that you could be waiting for someone.
What are the, you know, when people are waiting for other people as they are wont to do?
You know how humans wait for other people? You know how a regular human person would do thing?
You order Domino's and you see the Domino's tracker and you're waiting for it to get there. You can play here.
Yeah.
So what's the combat system like? You said it's not turn-based, right?
You're controlling one guy, and it's a straight auto attack. So you engage in combat, and then as long as you're sort of in range of an enemy, you're just going to hit them with your sword or whatever weapon you have. And then that is you have basically four attacks programmed to the face buttons. And each one of those is kind of building up a meter as you either take damage or deal damage. And then you can use those to some of them will do things like, be focused on side attacks or back attacks so you can position yourself. Or they will. There's one attack that I have that basically will pull a potion out of an enemy for healing because your character doesn't have their own healing ability early on. And then on top of that, yeah, you're building up this connection with your your blade, and then you can use them to, like, I don't know, call down a fire attack, and then you'll do some burn damage on the enemy. So it's more of a, I don't know, you're not as active as you might think. It's kind of like MMO-y, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I was thinking I'm running around in circles waiting for meters to fill up. That sounds like, wow.
It is very MMO-y. Like you could literally just walk up to an enemy that you're stronger than and then, you know, look away and then look back and they will be dead.
Hmm. That's so you check on the person you're waiting on.
You check on the person you're waiting on.
Nope, I'm not done yet. Oh, look, my fight I just ended victorious with my fight. I'm not hearing anything that makes me want to rush out and grab this, though. It feels like a game that's made. It's preaching to the choir, right? It's made for people that already 100%. Love these games. Yeah,
it's not like Final Fantasy 15 where they're like, you know how these games are somewhat impenetrable for people. Well, this is the game to, right. Make it more. No, this game is. From the very beginning, you fight one monster and then you spend 30 minutes in a town talking to people and having them explain, like, oh, here's how this works and here's how this works and here's how this works. So it's going to be one of those games where if you dig on that, it's going to be right up your alley. I can almost guarantee it. But if you look at a game example, like the Dragon Quest games. If you look at those games and you say, no, those are never going to be for me. This game is never going to be for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's not going to be for me, but I appreciate that it exists.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to, I think both of you are not interested in this genre and you're never going
to
play this game.
I'm interested in waiting for people to do things though.
You love true. Waiting for people.
And especially
you got to wait until the 40th though until they're ready.
I like this genre insofar as it kind of does when they, you know, like a Final Fantasy 15 when it's trying to sort of be a little bit.
You mean that grander. Game you didn't finish?
I definitely did not finish that game, but I enjoyed some of it. Yeah, but you know who finishes Final Fantasy 15? Nobody.
I finished Final Fantasy 15.
All right, so somebody.
I love these games. I do enjoy
the games. So yeah.
I did not say I love these games. I said I appreciate these games when they're trying to do something a little different. There That's are funny. Games in the genre that have grabbed me before, but they typically aren't.
This game is not trying to do anything different. There is a scene. You could probably look it up on YouTube where it's like a big moment where you encounter a character and there's a lot of significance, and then you're just looking at how large her chest is, and you're like, oh, okay, this ruins everything.
I feel the same way about anime. I used to front like I was a big anime fan, you know, in high school, but it wasn't that I was an anime fan. I just liked the animes that were like the best of their best in class. It was like, it's not that I like anime. People who like anime, like watch a lot of garbage anime or not garbage. That's harsh. Just like sort of middle of the road anime. Right.
Yeah.
Those are the people that love anime. They just love the form so much that they want to watch all of it. Kind of how I am with superhero movies. You know, like I'll watch all the superhero movies, right? Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but most of them are, you know, decent. But for anime, like I will watch the best of the best. I will watch Your Name and Akira and, you know, like the best of the best stuff. I like it because it's good. It's not just because that's the genre. It's like it would be good no matter what genre it was.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those that this is an anime for it's got anime running, you know, with their hands spread backwards and colliding swords and guys with weird masks. Yeah, if what I am saying to you sounds in the least bit appealing, this game is 100% for you. If even just like a sentence I said makes you go, oh, it's one of those games. Yes, it is.
Fair enough. Christian, you want to talk about Destiny 2?
Yeah, so Anthony brought along a group of folk again. I ran the raid with him and his well-oiled machine of a crew before, and friend of the show, Rob Krekel, wanted to experience the raid, and we were trying to do it before new content dropped. And they're not introducing a new raid, but they're kind of, it's like a new room or tweaks to the existing raid. Anyway, I wanted to try to get him through it before the 5th, and Osiris came out. So Anthony got a nice little strike team together. Rob and I jumped in, and then one of Rob's friends also jumped in. And We played about 4 hours, Anthony, I think, last night.
No, I would say maybe 2.5.
I think it was longer than that. I don't know. We did not finish. We might try to finish tonight. We're recording Sunday. Rob might want to try. We'll see. But what I wanted to talk about the game as it leads into new content coming out and where it left off and all of the stuff that you know, they had said they're trying to fix about the game. I personally, I got my character. I have one warlock on PlayStation 4 that is level 300. And then I started playing again on PC, and I forget where I am on PC. You know, maybe what's it, not power level, the thing through the campaign that you unlock, your rank, I guess, whatever that is. I'm like halfway through the campaign, so 12 or something like that. And it's fun, but I kind of found myself jumping off to play other games, this, that, and the other. But listening to the podcast that Bungie put out and reading the blog post about trying to appease people with like in-game content, and we realize there's a problem, and Anthony talking at the beginning of the show of some of the issues the game has and some of the things that people are, the hardcore fan are trying to have changed in the way Bungie described, like they're trying to please three audiences, like the casual, the something else, and then the hobbyist, like the person who just comes in and plays a campaign, maybe doesn't finish it, the person who comes in and does some in-game stuff, and then the person that is upset that weapons are pre-rolled and there's not enough in-game content and they want to play this game every single day all the time.
I agree with you.
That's a difficult number of masters to serve.
I think basically what they did was they made a game that was initially going to please the hardcore because, you know, it was new content and be appealing to the casual. The casual was going to go, and then now they're faced with a situation where the hardcore, the people that play it every day, need stuff to do. They need things to grind for. They need reasons to come back to the game, and those don't exist.
Right. But so for me, jumping back into the game, having played on PC a fair amount of hours, but going through the campaign again, but then jumping back into my main character on PS4 and running the raid again, like, it was fun. We played for a long time. I had the whole thing was fun. And I guess because the game.
So you're number two category.
Maybe. That's the thing. I guess because the game is trying to please this, you should be able to play it every single day type of audience, that they run into problems because it's not a sport. I guess the closest thing to it is PvP, but it's this weird thing.
But that's what any MMO is. Every MMO has this problem, every single one. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to talk about, like having, again, diving into it again and playing again. I knew going into the raid I wasn't going to get anything, any reward that made my character any better. But that wasn't why I was playing it. And why do we need that? Like, I know, Jeff, you're a big MMO player. And is just the act of the thing not fun? Like, I don't understand this. I had tons of fun. I would play probably every day if friends wanted to play because it's golf or whatever, right? But what is this association we make in our heads of requiring this stat to go up, or this, you know, dopamine release, it's most basic primal level, that instead of just going out and playing the thing and your skills are getting better because you're playing more and you're better at getting headshots or whatever it is. Like, so Jeff, I'm curious for you as an MMO player, why do you think, or do you think you do need that constant other reward? And then Anthony, as you know, a much bigger Destiny player than I am, bouncing off the game, is that a bad thing?
Well, you're talking about, you know, oh, just getting my skills better. That's what PvP is for, right? That's why people play PvP in video games.
Or horde mode. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah, but you're never going to be challenged on a skill level from AI, at least not right now. You know, maybe in a few years when the AI takes over. But at this point, you know, that's what human beings are there for, is if you want to get better at your skill, that's why PvP exists in games. And that's why I think people are so upset that there's no ranked mode in the Crucible, right? There's no, in Destiny [S2] Yes. [S1] 2, there's nothing for them to shoot for on that score, right? But the other thing is, if you build in a construct that says this game is about acquiring stuff, and you acquire all the stuff, why do you play the game? I mean, that's what has.
And but then you're only playing it to acquire the stuff, and then
that's the point. That's the game.
Yeah, that's
the rules.
That has always been Destiny. Destiny has always been about acquiring the stuff.
So why don't they then just make one thing that's literally, you know, Darth Vader? Why was Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker? I mean, I'm not trying to say, okay, it's a bad analogy, but like, why didn't Destiny just put in Luke Skywalker? You know, like the thing that no one's going to get. Good luck.
Well, this is the exact problem that you're talking about with regard to these three silos of types of player, because the third silo is always the problem. with every single game, there's the world's first guild that beats your new content in 14 hours after it was released, and they're super excited, and then they're like, now what do we do? And you're like, well, we worked on that for 8 months to give you that content that you beat in 14 hours, so I don't know, you know. And those people also are the most vocal. Those are the people that are the most – they're the smallest percentage of your player base, but they're also the most vocal. They're leading the charge online of criticism and demand, but they are also probably the people that give you the most money, right? They're the people that are a big chunk of why you make the game, because they're the most loyal, they're the most passionate, they're buying the books and the mugs and the shirts.
But are they ever happy? Is there an example of them being happy?
No. I mean, like, I think there are some games that do it better than others. I think Warframe is an example of a game that does it really, really, really well. And for some reason, Digital Foundry has figured out a way to please their player base in a way that many don't.
Because there's this talk of going to this game service platform, and that, you know, you need ways for people to continue to check in with your game and microtransactions to sustain things. But I feel like the stories that go alongside of those publicly are people being upset about them not doing it well, and everyone being frustrated, and the people that bounce off the campaign are going to bounce anyway, and they're not going to care. And then your most hardcore, at least the vocal hardcore, are always just yelling at you. And it seems like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't get it.
Well, it is damned if you do, damned if you don't. But hopefully in there's a lot of joy for people. And, you know, and you can have these kinds of things that are, you know, I think World of Warcraft, which happens to be the game I have the deepest knowledge base in this regard on, they figure out ways to do stuff that isn't essential to you. I mean, obviously there's armor sets and stuff that people strive for that are hard, and that's the case in Destiny as well. But they also have like mounts and weird side things, and, you know, leveling up your professions, and there's a lot of busy work and daily quests and stuff to grind all those things up that are intentionally very time consuming. And that is literally just to give the most obsessive fans stuff to churn on, and not to feel like there's nothing to do today. There's no carrot. You got to have carrots.
I loved the fact that I had tons of fun with Destiny 2 and then was able to walk away from it. But I guess I am not the —
you're not that third silo consumer.
Yeah.
Anthony, do you
feel the game was never, you know, like, was like even at its like early Destiny 1 days, the game was never, you know, good about balancing the casual and the hardcore. I think the main issue is that over time, Destiny 1 had developed this blueprint for, okay, well, here's how we're going to approach rewards, and here's how we're going to approach progression, and here's how we're going to promote the grind. And they had something that most people agreed, this is actually a pretty good way of approaching it. The game's super rewarding. You want to grind hardcore, you can grind hardcore, and you can always feel like you're getting something. Maybe it's not the things you want, but you're always getting something. And the only real kind of missteps in year three were largely based around the fact that the PvP meta was really discouraging. It focused on maybe a handful of weapons and nothing else, and there wasn't anything story-wise to go after. So there was the assumption, okay, well, Destiny 2 is going to deliver that story stuff and build upon this blueprint. But instead, Bungie said, hey, we have to do things different. We have to make this game feel different, or else we're going to get these criticisms of people that weren't into Destiny 1 are then going to go play Destiny 2 and say, well, this is just the same game and I didn't like that game. So they introduced the mod system, and they introduced fixed roles on weapons, which I think is perhaps the biggest mistake they did. And
Which just means that when you get a weapon, that's the only version of that weapon.
Correct.
Whereas in Destiny 1, you could get a weapon that had explosive rounds, or you could get a weapon that would do, you know,
correct.
Damage
well,
on
so
damage
your,
on
your raid weapons and your Iron Banner weapons had some kind of rotating perks that they could have, and then you had general like Vanguard drops as well. But yeah, they completely eliminated that, so that once you have that weapon, once you have Nameless Midnight, once you have Alone as a God, once you have, you know, Sins of the Past, you have the only version that exists. The only difference is, you know, the prestige armor or something like that has like a different color scheme, but you also can just swap that with shaders. So it really didn't give the hardcore players a reason to, okay, I've done my Nightfall strikes, I've done my raids for the week, and now I'm just going to grind this activity because I want this weapon and I want the perfect role. Every weapon is just, it has that role. And so I think it's a huge problem for the game in general, because like somebody like me who played 100 plus hours of the game, I have probably 85, 90% of the weapons. Like I'm just, I'm done. I have the one, but in Destiny 1, even in year 3, there was still something where if somebody said, hey, if you could have one weapon drop right now, what would it be? I could always name something, you know, the next thing. Okay, well, I would want an Aes Luna with this on it, or I would want, you know, a this or that with these specific perks. In Destiny 2, there's nothing that I want.
So do you think the game is worse because you have everything you want, and so you could still go play all the content, but you're not going to get anything that you want out of it, versus Destiny 1, where you're still, again, playing the same content, correct, but you might get something that you want, but I'm editorializing now, but if you're being honest with yourself, it doesn't really change anything about how you'd play the game anyway.
Sure.
Just, well, you need an excuse to play.
At the end of the day, like if you want to just step outside of yourself, you could just say it's a video game, none of this really matters, and that.
But I mean, no.
Well,
but
Christian, have you ever played like Texas Hold'em using M&Ms as currency?
Oh yeah, I usually have to get a bad tummy ache.
Right, it's pointless. But right? You ever have the friend who's like, "Let's just use dimes." It's like, okay, I'm all in. You know, it's that kind of situation. It's like, yeah, the game Texas Hold'em is fun, but I think the way it's built requires stakes. And in this case, the way Destiny 2 is built requires some stakes. And if there's no stakes, then it seems like a pointless activity. Even
if there's M&Ms, so why do you need stakes?
Oh,
well, Christian, I feel like you don't have experience. Like Jeff, I think can more relate to what I'm talking about because he has experience doing what I'm talking about in other.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not trying. I'm just curious. So the reason I brought this up in playlist here is because it's what I'm playing, and I'm excited for Osiris coming out. But I guess I am. I guess I'm that happy middle player that stuck with it a lot longer than other people. Didn't ever care that I couldn't play it every day because I'm playing something else. And when I did go back and play it again this week, and you know, raided for whatever it was, several hours, it's awesome. Like I was like, oh yeah, this is great. And I didn't bounce off because I wasn't still earning stuff. It was just, I think I had other things to play.
Yeah, I think what you're coming to the game for is different. Because you're saying you're excited for Curse of Osiris. I would say a large portion of the community thinks that Osiris is going to be very disappointing.
Hmm. Yeah, you're just, I mean, the truth is you're more casual than the people you're talking about, Christian. And that's fine.
I'm a jeans and t-shirt Destiny player.
You did the raid the one time where we carried you through the raid, and then your second time doing the raid was last night when we were trying to carry you through the raid.
Yeah. This game is really fun when all the other people did all the work to get me.
Hold on. I'm going to play the audio clip of Jeff saying he's definitely going to raid in Destiny 2. Insert here.
Didn't I do a thing? I did a thing.
We tried the Nightfall, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't know thing. You didn't know thing. You're like level 240. You didn't know.
Should I do the thing?
But we can talk about another game. I don't want to dwell on. I know it's an old game, but it has new content coming. But as I was diving back into it last night, I was like, this is really fun. I'm going to be talking about this whenever we do our favorites of the year. Like, I really like this game.
It's a good game.
But then I hear when I try to like listen to shows that are still talking about it, it's just heaps of criticism. And I feel like it's this can't win situation.
Both things can be true.
Yeah. Of this evergreen game, though, feels like a tough business, I guess.
It is indeed.
Yes.
I want to talk about Doki Doki Literature Club. Are you guys ready for this?
Okie dokie.
If you listened last week to our show, we had Australian Nick Robinson. And if you know anything about Australia, you know that things are a little different down there. It's a different kind of lifestyle. But he screamed from the mountaintops about Doki Doki Literature Club. He said, one of the best games of the year, mind-blowing, life-changing, must play, right? So what did I do? I downloaded it during the show, hence the poor audio quality of last week's episode. But I downloaded it during the show, and I immediately played it this week. Played through the entire thing. And this is a very difficult game to talk about without spoilers. Very difficult, because it is a game about subverting a genre. It is a game about delivering this very specific genre of game that I've just never been interested in. And I'm sure there are lots of people that are interested in it. That genre being romance simulator. So there's this sort of subgenre of...
can we just announce full spoilers? Can you just go full spoiler? Anthony, would you mind?
I can... We'll go...
I've watched a full stream of the game, so you can...
All right. Well, I will get to a point where I will then say spoilers and people can fast forward. But I will talk non-spoilers up until that point. Okay. So you are safe for now, if you guys want to. By the way, Doki Doki Literature Club is free on Steam. There's no reason not to play it. I think you can probably get through it in about 4 hours, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. And I would say overall, for free, it's an interesting experience. I kind of wish, Christian, you had played it so we could hash it out. I think you would hate it, but
I'll pass.
But now even more, I want you to play it because of that. So non-spoiler version is it is a romance simulator. These games that are very anime, where you are wooing multiple, invariably, high school age girls, who you are, you know, trying to manage the kinds of things that they would like and tell them.
You run for Senate? Like, where does it go? What's the subversion of expectations?
No. Yeah. That's not. Yeah. Sadly, you would. Yeah. Sadly, this doesn't take place in Alabama. It takes place, in Japan somewhere. And, you are writing poetry in this game using words that you think will maybe work based on your interactions with these girls. The actual mechanics of playing Doki Doki Literature Club is mostly reading. You are mostly just reading text on a screen and pushing a button to advance to that text. There's not much more than that. There are very few actual decisions to be made in this game. It's mostly just a short story that you're reading. And I will say, it is not a poorly written short story. It's a bland short story for a large portion of it. Very bland, but it is of that genre. And for being a game that is entirely written, it's not poorly written. It's actually pretty well written. So there's that. It's not like it's a chore to read it. I was falling asleep during it. And to be fair, Nick Richardson, our guest last week, had said the first hour is awful. And he's not wrong. The first hour is awful if you're not into romance simulators. But the game is constantly giving you just little teensy little hints that there's something else going on. There's something more there. There's little tinges of, well, that seems odd. That was a little creepy. What's that about? So there's always this thing happening under the surface. And because of Nick's recommendation where he said, you know, just play for the first hour and then everything changes and you'll love the game, I was kept waiting. Like, was this the moment? Is it happening right now? Is this happening now? You'll know when it happens. But it does change. And when it changes, it gets more interesting. I sat up in my seat and I was now paying attention. But even after that point, there is a lot of the game that is still really bland and really dull, and you're playing through things that you've already experienced. So take that with a grain of salt. I think the game does some really interesting things, and there is one legit puzzle at the end. It's really the only quote-unquote puzzle in the entire game. It's not really presented like a puzzle, but it works out to be a puzzle. And that puzzle is so brilliant and so different than anything I've ever had a game ask me to do before that I give the game a lot of credit, and I think it's why people are shouting from the mountaintops about this game, because there's a moment where you do a thing that is really cool. So we can talk spoilers if you guys really want me to, but suffice it to say, I did not feel the same way Nick did. I did make a major mistake, which maybe I can explain to you in our spoiler section, that I think would have made the game seem way cooler had I not made that mistake. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I do think the game is an interesting experiment. I think it's clever. I think it is – the comparison that I made on Newest, Latest, Best when I talked about this is, you know how if you watch like a near future science fiction movie or a horror movie and you're waiting around for the cool hook that was the reason you bought your ticket to that movie. Like, you know, I'm waiting around for Freddy Krueger to show up because this is a Freddy Krueger movie, or I'm waiting for the moment where the aliens land in the backyard. But the movie has an hour of like, let's get to know our heroes and their home life and how nice they are. So that it establishes all that stuff before the cool stuff starts happening. But you're sitting around going, when is the cool stuff going to happen? That's this game. And it's very important for it to establish this baseline of who these characters are and what your relationship is with them and all that stuff before the cool stuff starts happening. But it is a slow burn. And there's a lot to get through of just clicking through dialogue before it gets to the cool stuff. So I can talk spoilers if you want.
It's up to you. I guess I like things that have a twist or reveal or whatever, but also like, I don't know if I need to spend an hour to get to it, you know, like 2 hours of my time. I'm never going to play this game. So I am A-okay with you going full spoiler if you think people on the podcast want to do it. I would say let's just set like a time, or when you do show notes, you know, mark it. Yeah. So it's very clear when we come in and out of it.
Let's just say I'll talk about it for 5 minutes. Okay. Starting now. So fast forward 5 minutes if you want not to hear any spoilers. Okay. So you're talking to these girls, and at a certain point, the game starts messing with you. And they start talking directly to you as a player. And there is a point at which one of the girls commits suicide, and then all your save games get deleted, and you have to restart the game and play through again. And you're playing through the exact same situations, except the girl who committed suicide isn't there. So it's cool, but you're also like literally having the same dialogue, but just the fourth girl isn't around. So you keep waiting for something else to happen, but you're literally like going through the same hour plus game to get to where stuff starts being weird. And stuff's really being weird, and there's like glitches that happen on the screen and strange dialogue bits, but it's few and far between still. Where the game is the coolest, and this is the spoiler, so be aware, I'm about to say the spoiler for the game, okay? At a certain point, one of the characters completely takes over and talks directly to you. Now you start the game and it asks you what your name is, you know, and like an idiot, I put in Jeff. I should never have done that. They ruined the game for me because I just put in my name. Normally I would put in a weird name, but I didn't. I put in my name. And at a certain point in the game, it addresses you not as your character, but as you. It like searches your hard drive and finds your username.
Oh, you put in your character name as Jeff.
Yes. So it says, Jeff, I'm talking to you now. And I was like, yeah, I know. You've been talking to me this whole time. But other people were like, you know, their character name was like, you know, Gandalf. And then it was like, Christian, I'm talking to you. And it was like, holy shit, what? That didn't happen to me. That didn't happen to me. So that I missed out on that. Okay. But the game starts breaking the fourth wall and talking to you, and then you get put in this limbo state where you, if you leave the game and come back to it, you're one of the girls like wants to be with you forever. So she keeps you in this place forever. So you can exit the game and come back to it, and she's still just sitting there waiting for you, right? And the only way for you to get out of this, again, this is the spoiler, but the only way for you to get out of this, and the game doesn't spell it out, but the only way for you to get out of it is literally go into the directory of the game, find there's a folder called characters, and you literally delete her file from that folder. And once you do that, she ceases to exist and the game, and you basically win the game. And it's a brilliant moment to go, I literally had to go in and edit the files of this game in order to break her trap that she had laid for me. She trapped me in this limbo state. And in order to break that trap, I had to edit the game file or delete the game file, as it may be. Really cool. But it's one moment that takes like 4 hours to lead up to. So I think that is a cool, cool thing, but perhaps not enough to blow my mind. But maybe my mind would have been blown if I hadn't been an idiot and just put in my real name the whole time. So who knows?
Interesting. Yeah, I think that always is a fine line in fiction or any story you're telling is how much time you spend with characters before you go for a payoff. And so maybe this spent too much time in that world before it went for the turn. Like, would it work for 20 minutes in this story and then they start putting the screws to you or whatever? But I'm curious to hear about, like, you know, next year or a couple months from now, the more behind the scenes stuff about this game, like a free game on Steam and it's getting talked up, like, you know, what do they do next? Where does this team go and what happens and stuff like that?
It's cool. It's ambitious. It's clever, right? It's just, I think it's one gimmick that is done very, very well. But also I wish there was more to it along that road. I wish it hadn't been such a bland experience up until it's cool, you know? And maybe my entire, you know, relationship with this game was wrong because I came to it knowing something. Like, if you literally were like a fan of romance games and you downloaded this game not knowing anything, I think it would be mind blowing. But it's, you know, as it stands now, it's just like this. I was waiting for it to be anything other than what it was.
from what I, because my kind of like approach to the game is I saw a bunch of people on Twitch streaming it and was like, okay, why are all these people streaming this game? You know, visual novels are cool, but they're not, you know, they're not that popular. Why are like all these big time streamers? And so, yeah, I watched somebody stream it and it was definitely, it almost kind of struck me as like a Frog Fractions situation.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people in chat saying, you know, do this, do that, do this, do that. And then you understood the other layers, but without really knowing that some of that stuff ahead of time or having somebody explain it to you, I might have just been like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Interesting game, though. I'm glad I played it. It was interesting.
Real quick before we kind of leave, this came in the chat, the Twitch chat, xSalty1, just about like Destiny, just like playing a game to be fun. I think this is a great point and one that just I didn't say isn't whatever. I wanted to get on the podcast. There are lots of types of gamers, and let's say the group who thrives on thrills is playing PUBG, DayZ, H1Z1, Fortnite, etc. And then you game for reward, and Destiny is a reward-based game. So when I was saying, why don't you just play the game and have fun? There are millions of people playing games to just play the game, have fun. But yeah, they're playing games that don't have any type of like loot progression system where you're literally just, well, want to play a fun shooter, go play a fun shooter.
This is the point that I made to start, though. What's the commonality between all the games you just listed? You're playing against human beings.
Yeah, I guess Fortnite before the patch or the other mode, the, you know, whatever.
I feel like I was one of eight people that played Fortnite before the patch.
That's what I mean. Right. And that was meant to be against AI. That was kind of the horde mode version of it. And yeah, and it wasn't super popular. So yeah, interesting.
All right. I know, Anthony, you had another interesting game that you wanted to bring up. What is HQ Trivia?
So HQ Trivia, for anybody that it's taken the world by storm. So I don't know if either of you were big fans of 1 versus 100 back when. I know there it has a lot of
on the Xbox. Yeah.
Yes. It has a cult following, lots of people that would love to see it come back. But essentially this is like an evolution of that, but on a grander scale and maybe not as fine tuned as that. But basically it's a mobile app that basically activates a live game show every day. During weekdays it's two times a day, and during the weekends it's the one time that it always is, which is 6 p.m. Pacific. But on the weekdays there's also like one at noon Pacific, I think, or maybe earlier than that. But there are 12 questions. There's a live host. It plays like a video, almost like a Facebook Live or a Periscope video, and then a prompt pops up with with multiple choice answers to the question, and you have about 10 seconds to answer. And if you get it right, you continue. And if you get it wrong, you're out. And if you make it through all 12 questions, you actually get a share of a prize pool, which is actual money. You can win a share of, it's typically $1,000. If nobody won one day, then they roll it over into the next day, but it's typically $1,000. And so if you're typically like between like 1 and 100 or so people.
Wait, 1 versus 100 again? Oh,
in 1 versus 100, it was like you were winning like Xbox Live games and stuff. But this is 100%. You're winning cash. You can put in your
illegal. How does this?
It might be illegal. I don't know. It's taking off right now, and a lot of people. Like I played today at 6 p.m. and there was 350,000 people playing.
Dang, that's about what's here in the Twitch chat right now.
It's an insanely popular game right now, and it's really fun for me to just get like random trivia, and you see like, okay, well, how do I stack up against these people? You know, it tells you how many people picked each answer, and you see how many people are left, and the numbers dwindle and dwindle.
Is it the kind of thing where you can't quickly Google it? Or is they have like a time?
It's 10 seconds. Maybe, you know, have other people around and have like a think tank type of situation.
You could ask your Alexa ghost, maybe.
Fastest fingers. your Alexa ghost.
And it's also extremely laggy because they don't have the infrastructure. They have the infrastructure.
This all sounds very on the up and up, I have to say.
I guarantee you, if you have, though you both haven't heard about it, you will have heard about it at some point.
Well, you heard it here first. At least we did.
It is crazy. It reminds me of 1 versus 100. The notification comes in at 6 p.m. and says it's time. And I get on to HQ.
It's time.
And I play, and it's, you know, sometimes I'm out by the third question. Sometimes I'm down to like the 10th question. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's really fun.
It's the PUBG of trivia games.
It is. Yeah.
In a HQ way. Trivia. What are you playing it on? PC?
No, you can play it on Android or iOS. It's an app.
All right. Cool. Let me tell you now about Christian Spicer's sheets. I know them very, very well. Christian's sheets are my sheets. They're Brooklinen sheets. That's just not because we sleep in the same bed. It's because we both have the same great taste in sheets, right, Christian?
And we sleep in the same bed.
Also, we sleep in the same bed. But only on weeknights and weekends. Right. Brooklinen sheets! Man, I'm so pleased with my Brooklinen sheets. Are you pleased with your Brooklinen sheets, Christian?
Yeah, they're literally our most heaviest rotated sheets. We have three sets. They're not pairs, they're sets. Three sets. And when the other sheets are on the bed, it's like a, oh, Christian needs to do laundry.
You don't have that luxury. Brooklinen is luxury bedding. I mean, honestly, the difference between regular old scratchy sheets and luxury sheets is huge. In fact, I've gotten addicted to it. We took ours out of rotation. Like, there's no rotation. There's Brooklinen sheets, and then there's wash and wait to go to bed until the Brooklinen sheets have been washed. And these are incredibly nice sheets. They have an exclusive offer with us, by the way. You can get $20 off and free shipping, and all you have to do is use our promo code DLC at brooklinen.com. These are sheets that come with a 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty, so they're pretty confident you're going to love them. They are really high quality. They're simple, beautiful, home essential designs. They have the ones we got actually are gray stripes on white. They look really, really sharp. They make our bedroom look really cool. They are less expensive. They have over 12,000 five-star reviews. They named one of the best online bedding, or they were named the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. These are great sheets. So why not give it a shot? Upgrade your sleep. Sleep with Christian. I mean, like Christian. By going to brooklinen.com, brooklinen.com. Use that promo code DLC and get yourself $20 off plus free shipping. That's pretty cool. Brooklinen.com, the promo code DLC. Despite everybody's lack of enthusiasm in the story of the week segment about VR, we've all been playing VR this week. And that's because it was a gigantic release. Doom VFR was released on both PlayStation VR and on Vive via Steam VR. When it was first released, it did not support Oculus, but that was patched into Steam VR.
Beta.
Beta, correct. You have to opt into the beta in order to get it to work, but it does work. And we have all been playing it. So let's start, Anthony, with you. You were, I assume, were playing it on PlayStation VR.
Yes, I played it on PlayStation VR. I did not have a good time with it.
Wait, oh, control no. schemes or scheme?
The using the
move?
Yeah, the move. Couldn't think of what they were called. Yeah. Is there another control scheme?
You can do the aim controller and you can do a DualShock 4. I hear they're all not great.
I think aim would be
so good.
But it doesn't let you do what you think you should be able to do with it.
What should I be able to do with it?
Shoot? Well, one, the game is built around dual wielding, like literally your character is dual wielding. And here, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a good time with it. I found it very clunky. You know, I don't know. Like, I have a PlayStation VR versus, you know, some people playing on more hardcore technology. I don't know if it's a limitation of my space, my lighting, my whatever. But yeah, I just had some situations where my hands were not in the right place, and it. I don't know. The game doesn't feel
unfortunate, man.
It doesn't feel like it gives you everything I liked about Doom is not present in this game. Like, I like the momentum and the glory kills and stuff like that. And I don't feel like it gave me that.
It's so unfortunate because that is exactly what I love about it, is that it does give me that.
Really?
I think it's phenomenal. Christian, what is your feeling?
So you can watch, I have 40 minutes. I've played a little bit more than that, maybe an hour or 20, something like that. I have 40 minutes archived on my Twitch, and it's also on my YouTube, which is just ChristianSpicer713. My Twitch is just my name, Christian Spicer. So you can see my first 40 minutes with it. Oh, it is disappointing, but
what?
Maybe this is that you're the only one playing it the quote unquote pure way. I was playing with Oculus with touch controls. But I also don't have a huge VR space. You've seen both of you, I think, have seen my office where I game, and it's right
next to your bed with Brooklyn and sheets on it.
It's right next to you, and you're like, come to bed. And I'm like, one more level. not huge, but like, you know, I've done, a Drift and that other Raw Data and, the other red people that I like super hot. Like, all of that's worked fine. And for this game, I agree with Anthony that I would much rather play, like, it's fine. It's not bad. It's fine. It's fine. But like, in order of playing Doom, it goes Doom 2016 on PC, Doom 2016 on Xbox or PlayStation 4, Doom 2016 on Switch, maybe OG Doom on a Pentium 286, and then like Doom VR. Like, it has like all of like the music is still there, and like when it's intense, it's like, and in Doom 2016, I'm rip roaring through a room, just going gangbusters on whatever I want, and just like dashing into the action because what I need to do to get my health regen, and then, you know, doing a glory kill on a big enemy, but doing that also to load up my ammo.
Are you not doing that in VR?
It's so slow, Jeff. It's so slow. When you have to pause and it literally goes into slow motion so that you can teleport to move somewhere, and the music is still like, and you're just like, where am I? Okay.
Yeah. Doom for me was always about like, you know, oh, there's a guy. Okay. I'm just going to run around. And it doesn't even, you pick up the little, whatever, the little orange ball, and you can't even like, you know, he doesn't even properly crush it.
You're right. It does not crush the orange ball. I don't. You hear the sound of it.
Yeah,
crushing.
You just like that tap it with your finger. You're like, bip, and then
power
it,
up.
It just.
I just feel like the momentum was so slow, and half the time I teleport and then wonder like where I am, and like
I agree.
You can't really.
I agree 100%.
Well, see, you guys are both playing it on front facing only, right?
Yeah, I have two, not full room scale, I have two monitors for, but I feel like, yeah, you need, this game I bet plays a lot better in a huge room where someone is managing a cord for you.
Like, I don't have a huge room, I don't have a cord manager.
You built a cord manager. You literally built,
I'm like, I'm not using that anymore.
Really?
But I did build that. That was the old house. I didn't set that up here.
Spinning around like 360, because there's no way with touch controllers or the Vive controllers to like turn you. You have to like actually turn, or you can teleport around. And then I had another friend. Also, I should say I got a code for this game. And then I had another friend who's playing the PlayStation 4 version. And he said, this is using the AIM controller, but I've never felt queasier playing a VR game. Like, my forehead broke out in sweat.
So disappointed.
Couldn't do it.
You guys, I have had so much fun with this game. And the thing that I can't believe is how kinetic and balls to the wall they managed to make it. Like, I am zipping around, popping in and out of slow. I don't stay in slow motion forever. I don't know why you guys would stay in slow motion. You pop into slow motion long enough to line your reticle up to the glory kill guy, pop over to him. There's stuff being shot at you all the time. So you're using the dash. The way it works is you have two kinds of movement. You have teleportation, which you can teleport really long distances actually, or you have a quick dash. And I'm using the quick dash constantly to dodge out of the way of projectiles coming at me. But I am shooting a guy until he turns his glow like in, you know,
the glory kill.
The glory kill. And then you teleport and it does go boom, slow down for a second. You aim up your thing and you shoot over to him. But I'm zipping around the battlefield. I'm circle strafing on guys with my dash. I'm blasting stuff. The game looks awesome. It's kinetic and crazy. And I'm like, I feel like a god. That's the thing that I was most worried about, is that Doom makes you feel like a god because you are just like tearing into dudes. I'm hiding behind this, you know, this cover until the best moment to shoot a thing. Nah, not in Doom. In Doom, you're like, blast you, punch you, run over here, smash this, get behind that guy, kill you. That's how I'm playing this game in VR also. And it's extremely fun. I'm just shocked that you guys, I mean, it may have a lot to do with the fact that you're just playing on front facing stuff.
Maybe. When I finished playing, I didn't play it that long. I played it probably a little longer than Christian did before. I was like, nope, not for me.
Which is maybe half the game, right? It's not exceedingly long.
Oh, is it? I watched some other people play, you know, like watch some Twitch streams to kind of like see, okay, am I, you know, what's the difference between what experience I'm getting on PSVR versus what people are getting on, you know, more high-end tech. And a lot of them were having the same problems I was having or feeling like, you know, I don't know if they weren't using room scale or whatnot, but yeah, it just doesn't seem like VR just to me doesn't seem like the technology that can blend well with a game that has like, I mean, I think Doom is like one of the fastest paced games I've played in a long time. And VR is very like, you know, teleport and then here I am.
No. Nah, yeah, that's not how I play Doom. It's not how I play Robo Recall. It's not how I play Raw Data. I mean, all three of those games are incredibly fast paced.
But I guess
I said they're better. Count than Doom.
That yeah, Jeff, you are like a VR pro. You like basically live more of your life in VR than you do in the real world. So maybe, but you have to like take a step back and say like, well, what about somebody who's just like, well, I bought this VR headset for Doom VR, but you're like, well, I know teleport is, you know, it's built into your brain now, but to somebody else, they might be like, well, what? I'm going here. And then I'm okay.
You wouldn't say that if you were a VR construct in my simulation.
That's true.
I feel like this game, Doom 2016 was one of my top five fave games of the year. Thank you to, I should have had their name called out, but on our subreddit, someone went and compiled all our past ones. That's awesome. It was not on yours. So I kind of like, I'm talking about Doom here. And two,
while you're saying you like it better than me and therefore
I like the original better than you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so maybe that's why I don't like this as much, but you also like VR more than me, which is why you maybe like this more. Sure. You also, not that everyone else's reviews are right, but after I played it, instead of watching like Anthony, I went and read about it, and you feel like an outlier. Like everybody else, I feel like is like 7, 6, 7. It's like it's fine.
Oh, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's, you know, what's the Cloudhead game? It's not Call the Starseed or something. You know, it's not like one of my favorite VR games, but it's a blast. It is so much fun, and I didn't want to stop playing it, and I just couldn't believe how kinetic and crazy and fun it was. But it also is just a shooter. You know, it's not like it's reinventing the wheel. So yeah, I'd probably give it a 7 or 7.5, 8, you know, but it's not, you know, it's not going to be game of the year for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. I went into it with really high hopes. Again, Doom 2016, one of my top five of the year, one of my faves of this generation. And I feel like this game is, to me, and I'm probably being a little dismissive of a little poo-poo-y, but it's like, it's not as good as Raw Data. It's not as good as Super Hot. It's not as good as that other one you said. The other one, to Robo Recall. Like there are things I think that use the tech better that are also just shooters.
I agree.
I had very high expectations for this game.
I would put Raw Data and Robo Recall ahead of it as well, for sure. But it doesn't mean I would also put Robo Recall and Raw Data ahead of Doom on the, you know, 2D Doom.
Yeah, so, no way.
Yeah, for sure for me, but. Yeah. But it also, it looks great. They do a really cool thing where you like go into a room and you can like pick up the in-game models and hold them in your hand and check them out. And a lot of fun, cool things. I mean, it's very much not just a port of the game. It's its own game. It's its own scenario. I thought it was great. And I'm sure I'll just get, oh, you're a fanboy VR. But it really, I was having a blast, man.
But you are, and that's okay. I'm so glad the Astros won the World Series, but it's just because I'm a fan of the World Series. You know?
If you have the tech to record it, you should record yourself playing, and we can compare it to Christian playing, and we can see the differences.
Maybe.
Because, I mean, I watched some of Christian
Christian's
playing.
Tripping over himself.
Well, no, it just, like, Christian playing felt like me playing, where I was just like, oh, I'm here.
I do want to see, Jeff, you got to stream some VR, because we will get the reverse of the No Man's Sky Jurassic Park video. Like Anthony and I playing will be like, and then Jeff's playing is like fully scored orchestra. John Williams is conducting.
I don't know. I mean, it takes so much to stream VR games, right? Because you have to like get
we
a camera on yourself.
Don't necessarily need to stream it. You could just record it.
Just record me without knowing what's happening in the game at all.
Looks like that, but you definitely get the sense of like it looked like I was playing it. It was like very like
I would look like this, like the Star Wars kid from that old meme. You know,
no, I can me set in the room. You up. No, record I can the video you of you playing, not you playing.
Fair enough. All right, well, that's Doom VFR. I just love that Bethesda is supporting VR in such a big way. I'm excited for Fallout. It's the last big VR, one of the last big releases of the year on any platform, really. So I'm looking for that. I think that's next week or the week after. Yeah, exciting. All right, let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time.
Right now.
Time. Bit of tabletop time now, and I am so pleased to welcome one of the designers of Seventh Continent and a founder and CEO of Serious Pulp, Bruno Sauter. Bruno, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm a huge fan of the Seventh Continent, and it really has become one of my favorite board games of all time. And I'm so impressed with the systems. I'm so impressed with the world you have created, and we're going to dig into all of that. But first, I'd like to talk a little bit about you and how the game came about. I know it's been a long gestation period for the Seventh Continent, but it's your third game, right, with you and your partner?
Yes, it's our third game. It's been for the Seventh Continent 4 years in the making. So basically 2 years more or less before the first Kickstarter campaign that occurred in 2015. And then 1 year and 9 months in the making to finish designing the game, manufacturing it, shipping it from China to our bakers all over the world, and then doing all the dealing with the after-sale issues and hopefully having good reviews.
Yeah, and you have, I should have said right at the top here, you have just finished up your second Kickstarter, which ended at over $7 million, which congratulations for that. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy year. When we worked on the Seventh Continent, the first base box and then the expansions, we had so many more ideas that we wanted to bring to the players, especially one that implied to play with like a hot air balloon to explore the sky and stuff, because the game is about exploring a mysterious world, like kind of a Jules Verne world. So in Jules Verne, as you most likely know, made all those books about traveling a balloon and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a kind of homage to Jules Verne. And we said, well, if the game is appreciated when it is released, then why not keep on our journey to the Seventh Continent and end this with a second Kickstarter in which we will have this new expansion, which brings new ideas that we had along the way. And yes, it was a tremendous success, and we are very proud and happy to see that the game was designed to be what the type of game that my associate and I would love to play. And unfortunately, since we designed it, we will never play it the way the players will.
Right.
You have to make concessions to make things happen. And this is what happened here.
And I would guess you will inspire a bunch of games like it, though. I think it with its success and with the amount of praise that the Seventh Continent is getting, I suspect we'll see a lot of games that borrow heavily from the mechanics that you guys have innovated.
Yeah, we'll see. It's quite difficult it's a lot of work and in our days, apart from Kickstarter, that allows us small publishers to go for crazy ideas like this one. By crazy, I mean you have to work 2 years before earning the first cent for your job, and it means a lot of hard work. My associate is a co-designer of the game, and also he does all the artwork. So lucky us, he was on the team. It was easier for us because we couldn't have afford someone to do hundreds and hundreds of artworks.
Right.
Before earning at least $1, but it's been quite a journey, both in our lives and in the game itself, to come to whatever we managed to achieve.
Yeah, we should mention your associate is Ludovic Raudy,
yes,
right?
Woody, that's, yeah, yeah. That's right.
And you guys kind of grew up together and knew each other for many years.
We met when I was 17, so I'm 40 now, so it's been, yes, 23 years we've known each other. We were both passionate gamers, and we met playing games together. And the thing is, we work very well together because he's more like the artist, and I'm more like the businessman in terms of who does what. So I'm more about taking care of manufacturing, communication, and writing texts and stuff, and is more about making videos or graphical design and artworks. And we do everything together, just the two of us. Well, most of it, we don't ship the games ourselves. We don't manufacture the games ourselves. But when it comes to designing and creating the artwork and the texts and the rule book and whatever it is in the box, it's mostly the two of us, and some people helped us for proofreading the cards, for instance, translating them into English. So yes, we work very well together, and we used to work before we had a company before Sirius Pulp in France. It was a communication digital agency, so we made websites for big companies. And so we've been working together for, 17 years now.
Wow. Well, it's incredible that you guys have brought so many innovations, I think, to the hobby, because Seventh Continent really feels so fresh on a number of levels. And I want to talk about each of them. First of all, what was the genesis of the idea? Was it the idea of exploring a one place that stays the same from game to game? Or what was the impetus for the design at the very start?
Well, it was Ludovic's idea. He had an idea of this kind when he was a very young boy, obviously not with that scale. And then in 2013, when we started working on this game, we had released already two board games that were critical successes, but not financial successes. So basically, it was our last shot for us. We were like, okay, now we have only one more thing we can try. And if it works, if it doesn't work, then we'll have to go back to our other knowledge. We have to do another job.
Your job, yeah.
And we said, okay, now something changed in 2013, and this thing was Kickstarter. So it allowed us to say, okay, so now we can work on something without taking care of how much it's going to cost, how long it's going to take. Basically, it was like a complete different approach from the one we had previously, because now we knew that we would be able to validate the concept before actually making it and manufacturing it. Wow. So with this in mind, we said, okay, so now we have no limits. So what is the game that we would like to play? And what game is missing for us in the board game industry? And the answer was an exploration game in which you actually explore, meaning you just you go to a place and this place will be there the day after when you go back to this place. So this was a very, very central element of the design. And then Ludovic said, okay, so how do I do that? And quickly we arrived to the choose your own adventure kind of mechanism, fighting fantasy game books, where you have those chapters that take you when you read at the end of the chapter, it tells you, okay, if you want to go north, go to chapter, blah, 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 or if you want to go east, to the other one. So we said, okay, let's replace the chapters by cards, and then whatever happens, you will take a number, and the number will be another card telling you what happens or where you go or what you discover. So it seems to be the very key element of the game design. And yet this one was, it was very quick. I mean, we worked, it took us maybe 1 week to solve these issues and 2 years to solve everything else. From random events, how do we deal with them? And what is the sequence to make sure that players don't forget to solve them? And it doesn't break the rhythm of the game. How can we split a group, especially when you want to go to somewhere else, you have to go in a underground dungeon. How do we make sure that players are not on two boards at the same time? So lots and lots of things were designed during those 2 years. And also we wanted the game to work very well as solo as in a group. And we are not too fond of rolling dices when it comes to solo play, because most of the time it's very punishing, or you just skip this because it's like, oh no, I don't want to lose because I made the one on this axe die. So we said, okay, no dice. And we love to have our games very limited in terms of different type of components. So if we make a game with cards, we try to make 95% of the content cards. If we make a game with dice, and we'll have mostly dice in the game, we try not to have at the same time, okay, some cards, some tokens, some dice, some whatever. So this one was going to be cards. So we focused on having a system that works with cards. And we came up with this idea of an action deck where the more you draw cards, the more successful you will be, but the sooner you will die. Which is something that allows you to not to cheat, because you are like, okay, I don't have to cheat because I can draw so many cards if I want to. But then 2 hours later, you will face exhaustion, which is not easy to say in French. Exhaustion.
Right. Yeah. It's such an elegant system. And I wonder, the thing that so impresses me about Seventh Continent 2 is how thematic everything feels. I mean, you came to that system in a desire to want to have it remain card-based, but it really does feel like that's how it would be if I was on this island. If something takes more effort, I have to keep trying at it longer and it will bring me closer to exhaustion. And there's so many elements of the game like that that feel like this is really how it would be. You know, when I look at a card and I study it and I notice a little number, you know, etched in the corner, it really does feel like I am searching around on the ground in a strange place. I am so impressed that you were able to maintain that theme throughout all the systems in the game.
Well, thank you. It was one of our objectives was to not lose the players in something like, for instance, no turn sequence. We didn't want the turn sequence to come. And so you have to resolve it like, okay, so when it comes to your turn, you have to, one, do this, two, do that, three, do that. We wanted players to play, and then someone else plays, just like in a role-playing game. And so it's, you never lose the scope of exploring and having fun. And you don't have to take into account like, okay, this is a refresh step of the game turn. We didn't want that
right.
at all.
Right.
And yeah, well, hopefully we found solutions along the way to solve all the issues that we met and to make sure that as much as possible, everything that was a kind of a mechanic of the game would also be a support for the universe itself and the thematic. So, for instance, if you kill a bear, you hunt, you kill a bear, you might get blooded. But we don't tell you, okay, you've just killed the bear, so now you are full of blood. We say, okay, you kill a bear, you take card 105, and 105 says, okay, you're blooded. Which means we are not explaining people everything that is happening, but through the cards, when people, someone takes a card and says, okay, I'm bleeding, I'm bloody, sorry. Okay, I just killed the bear. So obviously I use my knife or whatever to take the meat out and I put some blood on me. So, and later when you hunt, you have more risks of attracting predators if you are bloody. So once again, we are not saying, oh, you have blood on yourself, so now you are going to attract predators. No, it's a mechanism that tells you that if you are bloody and you hunt, then when you have to choose the card you keep, you will have to keep a predator card, for instance, because you are bloody. So it's right. the other way around.
Yeah, the mechanism itself, that choose your own adventure, you know, go to page 37 or go to page 102, that numbering system itself serves as a way to be mysterious so that you don't, like you said, don't explain everything right up front. It all is unveiled as you explore the universe, which is so much more fun and exciting.
Well, it's something different. Ahead. For instance, if you compare it to other narrative games, such as Time Stories, for instance, in Time Stories, mm-hmm. you are more about someone is telling you a story. In the Seventh Continent, it's more about you are living something. So we don't tell you what's happening every time you do something. It's more like, you do things, and then when the game ends, for instance, if you play for 1 hour or 2 hours, you will be able to tell your friends, oh, I did this, and I went to this place, and oh, this is what happened to me, and someone else will tell you, oh, I went there too, but something else happened to me. Or I was like, oh, I was almost dead, and then I faced this snowstorm or whatever, or thunderstorm. And I found an animal that was hit by the thunder, so it helped me survive two more cards, and then I find some place to hunt. So it's like you are making your own story, basically. So it's very different
100%.
From the games in which are very fine as well, but it's something different, in which the game tells you what's happening. So games such as Dead of Winter, for a small part right. of it, or Time Stories, or Tales of right. the Night. Those kind of games are more about you are a bit a spectator and you are listening to someone telling you a story. In Seventh Continent, the story is less important. So basically, you won't be like, you won't understand possibly what's at stake, but what you will live along your journey will be the story in itself.
Yeah, and it works so well. As you said, you know, you'll get into those situations. And I was always so impressed that it seemed so bleak. We were getting down to the lowest last few cards and we thought, oh my God, we're all going to die. We're going to run out of exhaustion. And then something would happen that gave us this ability to refresh our deck. And I have no idea how you managed to have that balance there that it seemed like at the last second we would have this respite from certain death. And I was like, how did they know we would need this now? It all seemed to work so well.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to balance the game, especially when players can do almost anything. Yet we have some tricks. So there are some things that, as the gods of this universe, we can make sure. So, for instance, when we built the continent, we made sure to choose wisely where to put the hunt places. So they are not too close to one another and yet not too far away. So we knew that how many cards people would burn between one spot to the other, and it helped us decide, okay, so when they will arrive there, it might be a good place to hunt, and we are going to put this here. So it's kind of, it's game design, basically, but and it's very, as I said, so for some players, it's going to be a rough journey. For others, it's going to be more easy. It depends on the way also you get into being a good survivalist adventurer in the wild. Because depending on if you take care of the footsteps you see on the terrain cards, that will help you find gear more easily, game more easily, or the way you play is very important on how much you will survive. It's really a survival game also, apart from being an exploration game.
Right, for sure. It feels that way. And I imagine that there you have some crazy spreadsheet somewhere that had links all the numbers to one another. It was just the pure logistics of the numbering system a nightmare, or did that work out easier than I would expect?
No, it's a nightmare. But the good thing is, once it's done, it's very easy to check if everything works almost properly. So basically, yes, we have to make sure that everything works. So especially in a game where you can do something on day one, let's say, of the adventure, and then 10 hours later, you will do something that is directly linked to what you did 10 hours before. So we have to bear in mind all those kind of situations, especially when you do something that has a definitive outcome, a consequence that is going to apply forever on the continent. For instance, if you meet someone and decide to kill the guy will always be dead, so we have to keep this in mind. And not have something that spoils this along the way. Yet, once we add all the cards, we put every card on the floor of our living room. So it's, I guess it's a 6 meter square surface when you put all the areas at the same time on the ground. It was a huge map.
Wow.
And then you put one card after the other to make sure that every number fits and you don't come in a situation where when you have to go north, you take card, let's say, 132, and then 132 is not meant to go there, so you know there's a mistake. So it takes time.
Oh, man.
It takes about a day to check every version of the game to make sure every number matches the card it goes to or the event related. So hopefully we made very few mistakes, considering that I think we had 10 cards, maybe with small mistakes on 1,355 cards as total.
Wow!
But yes, we are going through the same thing now with the new expansion. Especially it's worse now because now you can fly in this balloon. So the balloon allows you to basically land on several places on the base box, which does exist already. Go back to the sky, explore new areas and land and go back to the sky and stuff. So we have to make sure that it all works together. And that's only a fifth of all the cards we are designing. So, yeah.
It's I love the game so much. And one of the things I think that for my audience is a little, I don't know, frustrating or disappointing is that you have no plans to sell the game other than Kickstarter. Is that right?
No. Yeah. So the game is very expensive to manufacture. So when it comes to classic distribution, meaning you go through a distributor that sells your game to a shop that sells the game to a final player or consumer, we just considering how expensive the game is to manufacture, and because we chose to have also, when you spend 4 years on the game, you want the components to be top of the hill, and in the end the game is very expensive, especially because there are more than about 1,000 cards in the base box alone, so it's very good paper. So this was not possible, unfortunately. And also we think that we want to design other games using what we call now the choose your own path system, which is our, mm-hmm. basically it's our game system that we've developed for Seventh Continent. But we really would like to explore it in other universes, such as, say, Med Fantasy or sci-fi, because you could.
Yes.
Yeah, there are many things to explore there with new mechanisms. And so basically, we've been working for 4 years on Seventh Continent, and now we want to also try something else in the future. So we are. We are focusing on delivering the new expansion and the new content. But once it's done, we will start working on other universes as well, most likely, yes.
Oh, that's so exciting to hear. Do you think now that you've sort of worked out the systems that building new content into that system will go quicker than it was the first time?
It should be, yes, for some aspects, especially because what took time really was to design the stuff, as I said, taking care of the sequence for random events or stuff like that.
Right.
This is done, but if we go through new universes, some rules will have to change. For instance, if you play a knight in a Medfan universe, he won't craft his sword, so we have to find another way to deal with that kind of stuff. But this is not much compared to all the work that has already been done to ensure that the system works. So it might be quicker, yes. Yet we'll have that will take time as well, so I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
We have this wish, but we haven't started really working on this. We are focusing on Seventh Continent right now.
Sure. Well, I'm very excited, especially the idea of a sci-fi version of this game. Oh my goodness, that would be right up my alley. But I love the Seventh Continent. I thank you so much for spending time talking to me about it. It's such a huge achievement, and as I said, one of my favorite games of all time at this point. So I'm really, really grateful that you guys put it out, and I hope more people give it a try.
Well, thank you for having us on the show today. It was very nice to talk about what we do, because like most game designers and game publishers as well, I guess in the end it always comes to sharing the same hobby and passion with our customers. So it's just a win-win situation.
Awesome. That's well said. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much, Bruno.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, guys, let's wrap the show up now. We do have our parting gift coming at you, so stick around for that. But Anthony Taormina, thank you so much for being here. It's always fun talking to you, sir.
Happy to be here. Happy to, vent about Destiny where I'm not just alone in my room. People are listening to me now vent about Destiny. So
we're just in Jeff's VR game. No one's listening.
That's true. But yeah, always a pleasure.
Well, are you still playing Destiny on the regular, or is it faded?
It's faded. I probably play it once a week, maybe. I think I'll
when Christian needs you to carry him through a raid, that's when you play.
Pretty much.
GD right.
Well, I think part of it is just, the difference between Destiny 1 coming out in 2014, which was not a great year. This year, so much better, more games to play, so easier to be pulled away. But I think now that things have died down, through January, I think that I'll be playing more Destiny 2 and using it as a fun communal experience.
Cool. Well, where can people keep up with you? I know you do a nightly stream and you've got stuff all over the place. So where can people find your work online?
Well, I'm editor-in-chief of GameRant.com. So if you want to support me or see anything related to my video game coverage, you can always read GameRant.com. But yes, I do also, I try and stream almost every night. I play any new game that you can think of. I play it on stream outside of, I don't have the capacity to stream VR or PC games, but from Call of Duty to Battlefront to Lego Marvel Superheroes too, I've streamed it. So facebook.com/gamerant is where you can see that, and then if you just want to hang out and hear what I have to say, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/antaormina.
Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
If you're listening to this live here, or as soon as it goes up and you're in Los Angeles, I'm doing a part of a great show Monday night at the Hollywood Improv called Glazed with a buddy of mine, Michael Glazer, who just recently wrote on, he was in one of the Marriages videos we did, Jeff. He was one of your gaming buddies on one of those. And he also just wrote on Night of a Thousand Stars, the big HBO, you know, telethon. He's hysterical. Happy to be doing that. It's Monday. And then now we're in December, so I can talk about it again with more gusto. The 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th, Thursday through Sunday, I will be at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City with Justin Willman, who's just absolutely incredible. You've seen him on Ellen, Tonight Show, I think Tonight Show, Comedy Central. He's awesome, and I'm very excited to be doing those shows. So if you or anyone you know are in around Salt Lake City, check those out. And then if you want a little bit of extra geeky goodness from me, I do another podcast called At Least 20 More Minutes. You can find at patreon.com/Christian Spicer. This week's is about Punisher and how I think that character works best and how I think he sometimes does not work as well as he could. Jeff, what about you?
Well, I have several other shows for you to check out, including a daily video game show. You can listen to me keep you up to date on all the news, including stuff we may not have time for here on DLC. Daily updates, about 10 minutes a day. It's called Newest, Latest, Best, and you can find it anywhere you get podcasts by searching for Newest, Latest, Best, or by visiting anchor.fm/NLB. You can find it there as well. And I do a movie review podcast and TV shows. It's called the Slash Film Cast. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. We're talking about Lady Bird this week, which I know Christian yes. had as his parting gift last week. An amazing movie. Wonderful movie. Here's talk about that at slashfilmcast.com. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns, which you can find at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, guys. Let's give the folks something to look forward to this week in our parting gift. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Anthony, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I have a it's a three-parter. Step one, I want everybody to find a copy, hopefully legal, of The Room. I want you to watch The Room. Step two, this weekend, it's expanding to local theaters. So if you live in like a major city, you'll probably be able to see it. I want you to go see The Disaster Artist. And then step three, get a copy of The Disaster Artist book. Read that book. It'll change your life. All three things will change your life all at once.
I definitely can concur with all of those. Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
Well, I met a listener out IRL today. We were enjoying the wonderful Southern California weather, and Jerry came up and said hi.
Jerry.
Great dude. Really cool. I'm super glad he said hi. He also said he always listens, so I'm making sure that Jerry listens all the way to the end, right? Jerry, you here? You listening, buddy? It was really cool, actually. I always love that. If you see me, please do. If you come to a stand-up show, and you know, it might take me a while to get off stage or out of the green room, come around to the front. But it's just cool, just out in public, having a good time. And Jerry came up and said hi, so I wanted to say hi. But I said hi then, too. I didn't ignore him and be like, wait till the show, jerk. But I wanted to say hi back to Jerry and give him a shout-out. And
you
then
really
also,
you really explained this whole Jerry interaction in a lot of detail, Christian.
Hey.
A lot of Jerry talk on this episode.
You know how it goes, Jeff. on the seventh day, God rested, and on the 40th day, God said hi to
but
Jerry.
But that one makes sense.
Yeah, that one does. Yeah.
It goes perfectly with the Sean's intro music for this segment. A new Dashboard Confessional is coming. It's not coming until February, and the single's been out, I think, since November, but I'd be remiss if I never mentioned it on here. A new Dashboard Confessional album is coming, and it's coming fairly soon.
Oh, cool.
Hands down, buddy. It's a good song.
Yes, I remember them well.
We have a listener.
Wait, no. I'm going to interrupt you again. What? Stop. Just you. I get that you love VR, but you've been a poo-poo head this episode, buddy.
I have. It's weird. I spent the 2 hours before we recorded at the urgent care with my son who had a fever. So I may have been in a poopy mood. I apologize. Oh, well,
damn it. Nah, now I feel son of a bitch.
I apologize, Jeff, to everyone.
You just checkmated me. Ah.
he seems to be okay, but we are a little scared.
I love it, buddy. I'm sorry about that.
Something fever. It was rough. But you know what, Christian? I apologize for making you feel bad.
Stop it.
we have a listener-supported parting gift. We have a listener call-in. No, that's a different show I do. I can't even speak. We have a listener parting gift. If you want to send in a parting gift of your own, send it to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Also, any comment or question you might have, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Great place to send that as well. This comes from Aaron from Tallahassee, Florida. Aaron says, I have a music recommendation that seems appropriate for the show. You guys have mentioned liking The Midnight a few times. What? Christian, high five on The Midnight. You're not high-fiving me back?
Christian? I high-fived you back.
Okay, cool. I think both you and the other listeners would really dig The Proto Man. It's a Mega Man-inspired rock opera combining 80s synth goodness with the occasional Sergio Leone Old West vibe, lo-fi punk, and numerous other influences from bands like Queen, Styx, and Iron Maiden. Their live shows include a bit of fun melodrama, and their loyal following always makes for a very friendly and positive crowd. If you want a sample, I'd recommend listening to their song Light Up the Night. But their albums are each an act in a larger story and are a great listen from beginning to end. I usually find video game bands to rely a bit too much on their source material, but these guys and gals have taken a loved video game franchise and turned it into something completely new and fresh that stands as great music on its own merit. I can't recommend them enough to fellow gamers and fans of music in general. So thanks, Aaron. That's cool. I've never heard the Proto Man. I have heard of them, but I've never given them a shot. So maybe I'll take a listen to the Proto Man. My parting gift is a Netflix show that I recently discovered and have fallen in love with. That's more powerful than love. Lerv. It's called The Toast of London. This is a British show about a guy named an English stage actor named Toast, who is trying to get work, constantly having a hard time getting work, has to do other kinds of work. It's brilliant. It's ridiculous. I'd never heard about it, but it's already had 3 seasons. It is my kind of humor. It's absurd. It's self-referential. It's really inside baseball on being an actor and being a stage actor and all that kind of self-indulgence that comes along with it. Toast of London. Can't recommend it high enough. It's hilarious. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Anthony Taormina and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those fun bumpers between each segment. Thanks to all the folks that hung out in the chat room. Remember, you can hang out with us. We're recording now Sunday evenings around 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. Caffeine.tv/Jeff Cannata, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. Thanks to all of you who download the show and listen to it. We really appreciate it. Please do recommend us to friends. That is our only method of getting the word out on the show. So we appreciate when you do. We will see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.